If you've got a 100-foot defensible space around your home, you have 8 times the chance of having your home survive a wildfire.
Dodd was speaking there on KPIX in San Francisco. And for USA Radio News, I'm Tim Berg.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
Police in Salt Lake.
Good afternoon. Excuse me. Good afternoon. This is Larry McEntee, and this is Home Time with Home Team, coming to you live at 3 o'clock on a Friday afternoon in Flemington. Home Team Inspection Service, when you want a quality, comprehensive inspection of your home, at 1-973-547-7748 or www.hometeam.com. Hi, this is Larry McEntee. Again, we're here on Friday. I don't have a guest today, so we're going to talk about a comprehensive home inspection and go through it. And it's amazing how many times I've talked to people and they don't understand what they're even paying for. They sign the contract and we do the home inspection, and nobody really understands what we do and what we don't do and what benefit we have for you as a home buyer. But before I do that, we're going to do a few things. I always start the week with something about myself so you guys get to know me a little bit better. For those of you who know me, I love to work with wood. Well, I'm a woodworker, and I love to build things. Haven't had a chance to do much of that lately, but hoping in my later years that I'll be able to go back to building furniture and special projects like that. So that's a little something about me. But we're going to do a commercial. We're going to do the weather, and then I'll be back. So hang on.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Okay, I'm back. Hey, the weather this week, if you're out there today, like I was, I did an inspection this morning. It was like 100 degrees and 150 degrees in the attic. But it's mostly sunny with a high near 91 with a calm wind. Tonight, we're going to have patchy fog at 5 a.m., otherwise partly cloudy around 68 with a calm wind. Saturday, it's calling for showers and thunderstorms likely, mainly after 5 p.m. So get out early, do the things you want to do early, and get out there and get it done, because Saturday is going to be the rain in the afternoon. Saturday night, showers and thunderstorms through 11 o'clock. Watch those thunderstorms, because when they come through, they usually bring a lot of wind with them. Sunday, slight chance of showers and thunderstorms after 2 p.m., but mostly sunny with a high near 83. So the weekend looks like we're going to have a patchy thing, so if you get out there, take advantage of the weather when you have it, because you may not have it for long. Monday, sunny with high near 84. Monday night, partly cloudy with a low around 65. Tuesday, partly sunny and a high near 87. And Wednesday, mostly sunny with a high near 89. So it's going to get hot this week. So make sure your ACs are working correctly and stay out of the heat if you can avoid it. But then again, get out there and get those things done early in the day, and we'll look at that. I'll be right back.
Are you looking to get your message in front of a qualified audience through all the noise out there today? Consider taking an advertisement out on Hunterdon Chamber Radio, WHCR, DB, the voice of business. Contact the Chamber today at 908-782-7115 or give us an email at info@hunterdon-chamber.org.
I'm back, and again, this is Larry McEntee on the Hunterdon County Radio Station. Let's talk about home inspections today, because that's what I do, and normally my show is a guest for that, but we talk about something to do with the house. We'll have a couple of realtors coming on, electricians coming on later in the month, but right now we'll just talk about the basics of a home inspection, and basically there are several associations out there that set the standards for home inspection, but New Jersey has its own. Of course, New Jersey and of infamous wisdom is the standards in practice, but it basically follows the national standards. I happen to be a member of NACHI. There's also a member of ASHI, and then there's ALFI. So there's all kinds of associations, just like many professions, but basically they all say the same thing, in that when we're inspecting a home, there's a legal requirement. There's a legal document that goes with it, and it's a pre-inspection agreement. It basically tells you that we own the report, and you get to use it for your negotiations of your home. But that report is not to be distributed, not to be copied, and not to be distributed to other people. And it's only good for you. So if somebody else acts on it, and whether it's good or bad, it's on their own, and we have nothing to do with it. We also try to protect our intellectual property rights so the reports don't end up in our competition's hands. But, you know, you can only do so much out there, but I don't worry about that too much. But and also the pre-inspection agreement tells you what we're not going to inspect. Some people think that they're paying for an inspection that they have to see everything and do everything and cover everything. There's a lot of things in the home that we can't see, we can't predict. But basically there's like 12 basic systems that, according to ASHI, these are the 12 categories, and we'll go into them a little bit each. One is the heating system. That comprises of either oil, gas, could be wood burning, but mostly oil and gas is what most people heat their house with. We do have a lot of houses with electric baseboard heat, though, and that's or electric furnace, heat pumps, things like that. Central air conditioning, that's temperature permitting. So understand, in New Jersey, you probably only get an air conditioned checkout about half the year, because the average temperature outside has to be 65 or older for us to test the AC system. That's for two reasons, because the AC system needs that temperature for the oil to be the right thickness and viscosity, and it could damage the compressor if you turn it on when it's colder. And the second thing is, it's hard to get a differential when it's already cold outside. So understand the AC unit. Really, we can't test it in the winter. So if you're buying a house, you sort of got to either trust that the AC is working, or put some money aside, or have them put it in escrow if you do that. Or you just have to wing it, in a sense. And sometimes I think, you know, you look at an AC system, $3,000-$4,000 at a high end. If you're buying a $400,000 house, a $3,000 AC system, you've got to consider that, and consider the age of it. If it's 20 years old and it's still working, I'd still consider the age, because if it breaks down, you probably want to repair it. But then we'll talk about the AC system a little bit more. Interior plumbing and electrical systems. Now, these are two hard ones. Plumbing is very difficult. The ends of the pipe, but it's very difficult when you don't see the pipes. And electrical systems, the same thing. We look at the box. We look in the box. It's one of the few things we take screws out of, is the electrical panel. And I'll tell you why in a minute about that. The next thing is a roof. And a roof is probably the number one concern when I have a buyer buying a house, is the condition of the roof. Everybody doesn't want a leaky roof, and it's very difficult to predict it, but you're looking at wear and tear. You're looking at valleys and peaks. I tend to focus on the edges and in the valleys, because that's where you get most of your leaks. The mistakes in the flat part of the roof are pretty obvious. But sometimes they can be missed, and there's a certain amount of, how would you say, wear and tear acceptable in a roof. I mean, a house that's 30 years old and has a 20-year-old roof, there are certain acceptable standards that you expect the roof to be in. And when you're buying a 30-year-old house with a 20-year-old roof, or basically if you're buying a 20-year-old roof, you've got to expect there are certain things that come along with that, and you have to anticipate replacing it at some time sooner than others. Whereas if you're buying a house with a brand-new roof, your expectations are different. And we'll talk about expectations, too. The attic is one of the toughest ones, because, I mean, if it's easy, if you get up there in a fold-down staircase, but most houses and many houses have access hatches. I'm a big guy. There's no lying about that. I mean, but I can get in through most accesses, but the trouble is people don't make them available. We cannot take apart your closet to get into the attic hatch. We cannot move 6 feet of clothes from the racks to get to your attic hatch. So understand, if we're inspecting your house and you know I'm coming, it's on you to make sure access to these areas are available, because without access, then we have to write up a limitation. And a limitation is such that I tell people they need to look into that attic before they close on that house, because I don't know what's in it. And the attic is telltale in a lot of houses. The attic is where you see the water leakage. It's really where I can judge a roof almost better than I can from the top, because you'll see the moisture, you'll see the dampness, you can see the rot if you have it. You'll see the destruction on the insulation. It's also where you see some of the wiring that's behind the scenes. You see penetrations from the house where you see the moisture that's coming up, bathroom vents that are not vented correctly, critter intrusion, mice intrusion. There's a lot of things. So we'll talk about the attic a little bit too. And then walls and ceilings in general condition. We're looking for bowing and all that. We're not looking for bad, a small hole or screw holes or somebody put their fist through. We're looking for things that are going to be detrimental to the value of your home. Floors are the same thing. I was in a house today that's 70 years old, and it had a rolling floor with it. And you sort of expect that. The timbers in it, we've been in it for about 70, 80 years. I think it was 89 years. So some of that is expected. Some of it's not. If it's a brand new house, I think I'm a little different than it is. And windows and doors. We're looking for operations of windows and doors. A lot of things in the plastic, the vinyl windows are those little plastic clips that hold them together. Many people break those, opening, tilting in the window and tilting them back. Or another thing that I watch for is the tensioner. That's the thing that holds the window open, because as I had one today, it didn't hold up. You thought it was, but if you let go and your finger was in that door window, you'd take your finger off because it acted like a guillotine. And then we look at the foundation. And we don't look at it in order, but I'll talk about the order in a minute. But we look at the foundation. We look at the condition of the foundation. A lot of people are concerned about cracks in foundations. And to be honest with you, some cracks are minor. The parchment is the outer coating on the blocks. It's important because it protects the blocks and stops the first barrier of moisture. But it isn't structural. It's basically a quarter inch of concrete that's like plastered onto the block to make it look uniform and nice and even, and keep the water from getting into the block. But a lot of small cracks in that are not really structural or worrisome, except for the fact that they should be sealed to keep them from causing further and further erosion there. And then we look at the basement. The basement's another key area. Basement hides a lot of sins if it's done right, in the sense that your plumbing, your wiring, and here's where your plumbing comes together and where it usually exits the house. Basements are one thing, but crawl spaces are another. Crawl spaces can be tough because we got to get into them. If they're 2 feet or higher, I'm getting into it. I'm wearing a Tyvek suit and a respirator, and I'm going to crawl in there and see what I can see. Many of people hide their horrors in the basement, in the attic, and I'm talking about wiring or plumbing or amateur work like that. And then we look at the structural components, and the structural components are your bracing and stuff like that. And I also look at, we're not required to, but I look at things outside the house that affect the value of your home. I look at retaining walls. If the retaining wall is failing and you're responsible for it, that could be a huge cost. And I don't want a young couple buying a house thinking they got a beautiful house and then have the neighbor come over and say the wall's falling on their property. You have to fix it. And it's $10,000 to reset the wall. So we do look at those things. So basically, that's what we look for when we're out there. And we go from there. And we'll take a couple commercials, and then we'll start talking about it a little bit. So I'll be back in a couple of minutes. Stay with me if you're interested. And we'll talk about that. If you have any questions, pop me on Facebook and put it up there in the comment column, and I'll try to answer your questions. Thanks, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com, brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Hello, my name is Robert Burns. My website is bobburnspeaks.com. Please tune in to Living Consciously, where myself and my co-host will entertain you, inform you, and educate you in certain modalities. Living consciously is something that we really must learn to do, because that way you'll know what's going on around you. This show can be heard at 2 p.m. every Friday on HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Thank you.
Okay, we're back. Let's talk about home inspection and what we're looking at. We talked about the heat system, and let's talk about the multiple different kinds of heating system. And this is to the current homeowner, too. And a lot of people don't pay attention to what their heating system is. Basically, three kinds around this New Jersey are basically forced hot air, baseboard hot water, and then electric baseboard. Forced hot air can be oil. It can be gas. It can be electric. And electric, it can be a number of things. It can be a heat pump. You don't see too many heat pumps out there, because the heat pump takes the heat, actually extracts the heat. In the summertime, it works as an air conditioner. In the wintertime, it works in reverse. And it actually works in reverse. There's a valve inside your condenser outside that actually changes direction of the freon or the gas or Puron. And it actually works in reverse. So it takes the heat out of the house in the summertime, and it puts the cold air, it takes the heat out from the outside and compresses it and generates heat for the inside. The trouble in the Northeast, you find that heat pumps in the wintertime, it can be extremely cold outside. If it's 0 degrees, it's very hard for the heat pump to generate enough heat to heat the home. But they're getting better at it, and it's like geothermal, and we won't talk about that today because that's a whole session on itself, but something I wanted to do, but the cost of putting it in the ground is very expensive. But it's free energy is what it is, because you're going to get the temperature from the ground. But to get the house at the right temperature, you use a heat pump, and it takes the heat from outside. But understand, it's not as warm. Even though the temperature may be the same at 72 degrees, the house will feel colder. The reason for that is baseboard hot water pumps, 140-degree hot water through your house, and it raises the temperature. It works like a thermometer on your oven. The gas goes on, the heat goes on, and the hot water circulates through the house. At 140 degrees, the temperature rises, hits 72, the pump shuts off, and the heat stops coming through the house. So understand that's how it works. It heats it, it almost overheats it to the point where it raises the temperature, and then it shuts off. Forced hot air does the same thing as the baseboard. It circulates about 120 degree warm air. That's why when you come into the house and it's cold and you turn the heat up, you feel that sudden blast. Well, first you feel a sudden blast of cold air because that furnace isn't up to speed. And newer furnaces come on slowly, so you avoid that. But most furnaces come on and they blow cold air, and then it gets hot, and then you'll feel 110, 115, 120 degree heat coming through your vents. It feels warmer even though the average temperature in the house is still 72 degrees. Whereas geothermal, it never gets up that high. It'll get to 72 over time, and it takes time to get there. It may take half a day to get to your 72 degrees, and it maintains that 72 degrees nice and even all day long, but you don't get that burst of warm air. It's sort of like when you first get underneath the blanket, it feels warmer than it actually is. So that's why some homes may feel a little chillier, even though the degrees read the same temperature. And baseboard hot water works the same way, except for circulating water through the pipes at that extreme temperature. Excuse me. God, it's Friday. I guess I'm getting tired here. I've been lacking sleep lately. But so that's the heating systems. But then you have the electric heat, and sometimes you're going to have electric elements, baseboard elements. It's a nice feature, but it's expensive, and electric is a little bit more expensive than it always has been. But it does give you the capability of regulating the heat in each room. You have a thermostat in each bank of baseboard. So you could actually have a house where every room has their own thermostat, and your daughter wants it a little warmer, your son wants it a little colder. You have an empty room, you want to keep it at 60. So you set the temperatures the way you want per room. In the bathroom, you can set it a little warmer. You can have electric heat underneath the floor. But you're using electric, and your electric bill is going to be a little higher. But then your energy bill is a little lower, and there's also not much maintenance for it. Although you do can have some maintenance. You can have electric baseboard heaters that don't work or stop working. You can have ones that are left on. You can get thermostats just like you do for your furnace that are smart and that will register when somebody's in the room, when somebody's not in the room, or set the timer. But you can imagine that Honeywell thermostat on your living room wall or the Nest one costs you quite a bit of change. And if you had it in every room, it would cost you quite a bit of change. There are whole house systems, electric heat, but then you do away with the capability of actually regulating it in each room. So those are your heating systems. But what we're checking is how many of you have looked at the flue pipe on your furnace lately? I looked at a flue pipe the other day on a hot water heater, and there was an inch gap all the way around it. Either it was never sealed or the sealant fell out, where there shouldn't be sealant. There should be a 3-inch to a 4-inch adapter, and it should be fixed, screwed, and maybe even taped. But there was a big gap, and the people we were inspecting the house for, the father-in-law was there, and he saw it, and his eyes lit up, and he says, "I don't like that." And I said, "Yeah, normally it wouldn't be a problem because it's still venting upward. But God forbid you had any kind of blockage or downdraft on that chimney. It's going to blow the carbon monoxide back into the house." Now, we've all heard those horrible stories of people passing out. And actually, we had a situation in my hometown where a whole family passed out. And the father came home, and he couldn't get them all out. And he came out, and actually, two neighbors were walking by, and they actually rushed in and helped and actually carried most of the family outside. And the fire company came and vented the house very simply, and it was fine. Turned out it was a bad hot water heater, and it was a new hot water heater that wasn't installed quite correctly. So carbon monoxide can be very dangerous, and you won't smell it. You won't know about it. If you feel a headache or light dizziness, or you can't feel intolerable sleep, it's a sign of it. So either you have a carbon monoxide detector, you know the signs. Unfortunately, the problem is it usually happens when you're sleeping and you don't know, and it's a real silent killer, and it's horrible when it happens. So understand this. This is why I want you to check. I want you every once in a while to check. I mean, you don't know. I mean, I was in a house a couple of weeks ago where somebody had put a box on top of the water heater, and it was laying against the flue pipe. Now, that flue pipe, it's very, very hot. The old ones do. The new ones use PVC and are vented right out the side of the house, and they're very high efficiency, and the heat doesn't generate that much on the waste product. They used every bit of the waste. But the old ones, then you have a steel pipe. You can't put paper or cardboard next to them. This was in the attic. I was laying against it, and when I moved the box, the whole box was black on the other side. It looked like a burnt piece of toast. I suspect that there was probably one or two hot nights where that hot water heater was running full blast that box might catch fire. So understand that can happen, and it's out there. So what I want you to do is every once in a while check it. Johnny could be hanging his coat on it in the garage or the storage room or the basement. He could have tied up a rope to hold up his hockey net, for all I know. But you want to keep every once in a while, just take a look at it, make sure it's sealed, make sure it looks upright, make sure it's vented to the wall, and, do that. And also check your carbon monoxide sensors. That's always a good thing to do. Even though a lot of them now are 10-year batteries, you still want to hit that test button now and then or read the reading. So that's the heating systems. Most home inspectors, now one thing we don't do, and I had a customer this week try to cross it out of my contract, and I can't. If I change my contract for every buyer, I would spend a fortune on lawyers and never make any money doing inspections. And my contract has been vetted by God knows how many lawyers, because we do over a million inspections, and the company and the contract is written for that such, and it follows the New Jersey standards and practices. We can't take the time to balance your heating system. For instance, in my house, the ductwork is probably a little smaller than it should be, because upstairs never gets cold enough, and it's because the ductwork can't push all that cold air upstairs, and cold air sinks. There's no way a home inspector on a 2-3 hour inspection is going to pick up that kind of subtle problems with a heating system. I'm not going to be able to tell that the bedroom over the garage is colder than the master bedroom because there's no insulation in the garage. There's actually a paragraph in the contract that says that we're not, you know, we cannot make comment on that, and we're not doing an energy audit. And so understand that there are certain things we can and cannot do, and he wanted that taken out, and then we wouldn't do it. So guess what? We don't do the inspection. It happens from now and then, but I'm not changing my contract, and my insurance company won't let me change my contract without their permission anyway. And that's not going to happen on a Friday afternoon, and it's not going to happen for a $600 inspection. I could spend $1,000 changing my contract every time I have a customer that doesn't like one paragraph of it. So that's the heating system, and the cooling system is much the same, except for the cooling system's got two components. It usually has a compressor outside, and it's got an evaporator coil inside. And if you're using a forced hot air system, the evaporator coil is part of your air handler that pushes air through when it heats it. If you're using baseboard hot water, you have a separate air handler, so you have a separate device, actually. You have your boiler to make your hot water and your heat for the house, and then you have a separate air handler to actually address the air, the cold air manufacturing, to generate that. Both the furnace and the air conditioner today, with the new efficiencies, generate water as a byproduct. That water has to be managed. It should be trapped. And what that means is the pipe coming off it should be, usually it's white PVC, and it should have a bend in it, like a P trap, that traps water in it so no bacteria can grow back up through the pipe. It's suspected that Legionnaire's disease was spread this way, that the bacteria that was in the pipe ended up backing up through the drainage pipe into the air handler and then distributed through the building. And that's how I understand Legionnaire's can be spread. It's still a good idea to have it trapped because it should be the way it's done. And then that should empty into either a drain. Sometimes it's a floor drain. Sometimes it's into the sump. I like to see it into a transfer pump. A transfer pump is that small pump that's next to the furnace that the water goes into, and when it fills up, it pumps it outside. Because I've seen it many times where it goes to a sump pump, and the people are complaining about the moisture in the basement, and they're running a dehumidifier. So let me ask you, what do you think is happening to the moisture in that basement? The furnace or the air conditioner is generating it, and trust me, the furnace can generate a quart an hour. The air conditioner can generate a gallon of water an hour when in the full summer, like the day like today. The water is going into the sump pump. It's evaporating into the air. It's in the air in the basement, making it damp. And then the dehumidifier is running on the other side of the basement, running full bore, burning your electricity, and it's taking the moisture out of the air, putting it back into a bin. The bin is going back. It's going to the pump. The pump is pumping it back into the sump pump. So let me tell you, people, if you're disposing of your moisture into the basement, into a hole in the basement, you're wasting your electric and you're wasting your money because you're just circulating the moisture. If you want to dry out the basement, you have to remove the moisture from the basement. So if you have a sump pump, it should be pumped. It should be drained either into a bucket and then taken outside or dumped into a sink. It should be drained into a drain, a sink drain, or it should be drained into a pump and then pumped outside. When I say drained into a sink, it still has to be above the sink so it can't siphon back into the unit. That's very important. A lot of people put it in the sink in the bottom. Now, if the sink has any water in it, it's possible that the humidifier will suck the water back up through there into the machine and introduce bad water and bacteria into your breathing air. So actually not do any good for you either. So there's a lot of little nuances there that that I can't go into because we could spend all day on it. But think about it. Get the water out of your basement. They used to, and I still see it a lot, is on the air conditioner, they drill a hole in the slab and put the drain pipe right through the floor and drain the water out. And probably 90% of the time, it's no big deal. It drains into the gravel underneath and it disappears into the ground. But if you do have a high water table and your sump pump is running, all you're doing is generating water to go into the sump pump to get pumped outside. So you're sort of in a vicious circle, and you're not removing that moisture from the air that you want to do to make that basement smell better or be drier or eliminate the risk of some mold. So that's where we are there. Forgive me, a little dry here. Again, it's Larry McAtee from Home Team. I do home inspections. I own up my own franchise here in New Jersey. And we do comprehensive home inspections, and we also do One Call Does It All, where we arrange your septic, your water. If you have a slate roof, we do a slate roof inspection. And I often tell people I'm a generalist. When you hire a home inspector, you're hiring your generalist like you do when you go to your general practitioner. And his job and the inspector's job is to recognize deficits in the house that need further attention by professionals. I know it sounds like a cop-out, but it really isn't. I mean, I'm not an electrician, but I know enough about electricity to spot something that should be done. I can't spot everything, but and there are some systems that I'm not supposed to comment on, one of them being, say, a generator system. I cannot tell you that the generator is hooked up correctly. There are different ways to do that. I can tell you when it's dangerous, when there's no transfer switch, and you may be back and powering up the street in an electrocuting alignment someday. But I will refer you to the specialist, just like your doctor would. I think that analogy is the best analogy I've ever heard, in the sense that you go to your doctor and they say, God, I got a chest pain. What does he do? He sends you to the cardiologist. And he sends you right now, tell you to call an ambulance. And if I go to your house and I open the electric box and I see arcing, I'm calling the fire department right there and then. But if I see a bad plug or I see bad maneuvers, one of the things I'll tell you guys, you think you've seen it all, but I did a condo last week and there were 12 splices in the attic. Now, the condo had aluminum wiring. Aluminum wiring in itself, we had to talk about this in an earlier session, but it's not the death sentence. It's okay as long as it's handled correctly, but these were literally cut and spliced with no electrical box around them, with just a regular wire nut on them, copper to aluminum. Hey, I'm an ex-fireman, and I'm telling you, that was a fire waiting to happen. And unfortunately, when it does happen, it's usually tragic. And I told the buyer, I said, I would not move into this house, and I told the realtor that they should tell the association. I think the association saw that they would red flag that unit, and they'd probably shut the power off to it until an electrician corrected those things. Can they be done right? Yes, they can be spliced, they can be put in a box, and they can be sealed the right way where there are no risks to anybody, even if they do arc. But this was not the way to do it, and somebody amateur did it a long time ago, and it's been sitting up there ticking away. And it may never be a problem, but you know what? I'd rather be, in this case, I'd rather be the alarmist and tell people this is not the way to do it. You need to get a licensed electrician in here, and they need to fix these things. So that's just a little there. Now, let's talk about the roof for a minute, though, because, I mean, everybody asks me about roofs, and to be honest with you, roofs are one of my hardest things. We can't climb on certain roofs. Drones are coming. Some people use drones now, but I think it's still out there getting better at it. And you have to have a license now, and you have to register. You have to take a course, and you have to register with New Jersey. And you have to pay a fee. What else? New Jersey wants to get money. You don't need one to fly one casually, but if you're going to fly one and make money with it, you need to be registered, and you have to get an FAA license. It also takes some time until you get good at it. It could take, 40 minutes added to your inspection. So, and it doesn't really give you the greatest pictures in the world unless you have an issue. And then it gives you tremendous views. There are a lot of roofs I can't get up on. I mean, I'm not climbing a roof that's 2.5 stories high or one that's a steep pitch that, that OSHA says that you should climb at ropes and riggings. I used to climb many a roof. I know my buddies in the fire company. We used to climb roofs and cut holes in roofs with K-12 saws on a slippery roof with an air pack and everything else. Today, it's a little different. I'm a little bit more scared on the roof, but I will get up on the roof when I can. Some guys are more daring than others, but I will caution any of you is when you look at a roof, don't look at it from the ground up. Think about what it's going to look like when you're at the top, because I've climbed many a roof where it seems no big deal to climb it. But then I turn around at the peak and I look down, and I'm coming down like a crab on my butt because I'm afraid of slipping off the roof. And the ground doesn't come up; it comes up faster when you get older. And I'll give a shout out to an agent named Nina that I was on a ladder on the side of a house checking out a window, and the ladder rocked a little bit. It wasn't a big deal, but it rocked. She took 2 steps forward with her hands out, and I just looked at her, and I busted out laughing, and so did the buyer, because we looked at her, and Nina was probably 90 pounds soaking wet, and I said, Nina, if I fall off this ladder, please step back, because I may die, but I don't want to kill you doing it. So I said, there's not much you're going to do if I fall off this ladder. And we all had a good laugh at that, but I do truly appreciate the effort. But those of you who know me, you see a 90-pound girl, and me falling off a 16-foot ladder, it wouldn't be pretty. So the roofs are something that we're cautious on. The biggest thing is a lot of people put 2 roofs on, and they do it to save money, I think. I think that's the only reason why somebody would do that, and it's really not a good idea. listen, you're going to open the roof. You're going to replace the roof once every 20, 30 years, maybe. Hopefully 20, 30 years. Get a look at the plywood. And the only way you're going to get that is by ripping the shingles off. The law allows you to have two. I had one the other day that had three roofs on it. Too much weight, too much heat, and too much destruction, and too much risk that the plywood could be rotting, and you'd never know it from underneath. So if you can and you can afford it, I understand that there are circumstances out there, so I won't judge, but rip the roof off. It costs you probably costs you $1,000 more to rip it off. And to tell you, a good roofer, they came across the street the other day, and they did a roof, and I swear they started at like 7:30 in the morning. By noon, it was ripped off. By 3 o'clock, it was tar papered, and before they went home at 6, it was roofed. I mean, it was re-roofed and shingled, and it was done. And the next day, the truck rolled up, and the guy made 40-foot gutters, and he was done in about 2 hours. Think about that. If you have to redo your roof, rip off the old one. Don't save the nickel. Spend a little bit extra. Some manufacturers will tell you that shingles will last longer. They look better, especially if they have defects in there and the ones underneath that they will pass through. That the new roof will sink on top of it, and you will see the same defects come through. So if you're going to replace your roof, get a good roofer and take the old ones off, get new flashing. That's the time to do it. Flashing is key. Make sure you get a roofer that knows what he's doing with the flashing, because if you have a lot of valleys and peaks that have to be flashed, it has to be done right. You just don't want to nail the new shingle on top of the old flashing if you can avoid it, unless it's in great shape. I mean, and there are times where there it is, and it's copper or something, and it's maybe very expensive ones. But everybody's seen a good flashing job on a chimney. It's the one where they're stepped in and they're cut at the top and they're actually put into a slot. It's not a straight piece that runs down the side and it's caulked at the top. It's acceptable, but it's not the way to do it, the way the tradesman would do it, and the way it takes time and skill to do it the other way. But I can guarantee you the other way will not leak for many years, many, many, many years more than the quick way that they do it now. The other problem with the roof is if you have siding like cedar shakes or vinyl siding and you don't pull the roof off, you end up putting the shingles right up to the siding or even the J channel on the vinyl, and now you have no space. And now the water can get trapped in there, and where is it going to go? It's going to go into the side of the house. It's going to go into your siding. It's going to go into your plywood. It's going to go into your house because the shingles are not shedding the water correctly. The only way to do that is to pull off the J channel and get the shingles, even the cedar shakes, sometimes you might have to pull up. Or they should have the space that they're supposed to have. Now, nobody likes what it looks like, but the J channel on the bottom of a vinyl siding should be 1 to 2 inches higher than the roof. It shouldn't be laying on the roof. If it lays on the roof, the water behind it will get trapped. If it's above it, the water behind it will weep out of it, fall down the shingles, and then shed the roof. Same thing with cedar shakes. I had a house the other day where the cedar shakes were touching the shingles all the way down. Can you tell me what was wrong with the bottom of the cedar shakes all the way down? They were all rotted, rotted completely. Now, the house was in pretty good shape other than that, so they did do a fix. They actually had a roofer come in, and he cut a 2-inch slot all the way down, put some flashing behind it, and then put a trim piece up, and it looked pretty good. I mean, it's probably a good fix for that, but you can avoid that. If you manage the water correctly, you'll never have to replace that cedar siding. Or even the vinyl siding. My vinyl siding's been on the house for 25 years. My roof's been on for 25 years, and I'm going to knock wood because it's not leaking. I say that because tomorrow it will be leaking. Watch. And then the other thing is penetration points on the roof. How many penetration points? Today you have less because most of your furnaces and your hot water heaters come out as PVC pipe, and they can come out the side of the house. They don't have to go up to the roof like they do. And then fireplaces can be steel pipes and things like that, but fireplaces, chimneys, all have to be taken into seriousness, and you have to be careful around them. The chimney, if it's more than 30 inches wide, it needs a cricket. A cricket is a little peaked section that sheds the water behind it, so the water coming down the roof splits in two and goes around the chimney instead of hitting the chimney wall and backing up. So those are things, and those are things your home inspector should be looking at hard. If you have a home inspector and you have a lot of penetration points like skylights and chimneys, and he's not spending some time looking at those, then you may want to have to look at it again yourself. These are also areas I tell you to do before you hire the inspector, before you put your bid in. Look at these things, because if you have a number of them, then you shouldn't be surprised if the homeowner inspector comes back with them. But also you might want to consider whether you're going to put that bid in knowing these things, because if I come back and tell you the roof's leaking and you need to put a new roof on it, and the buyer says it's as is, I'm not fixing the roof, then you've got a decision to make. And now you've got money laid out to me. You've got money laid out to a septic guy, maybe. You got appraisal. You got all this money laid out, and now you're going on to another house. So do these things. Look for these things ahead of time. It's not hurting my job if you know about them ahead of time. My biggest scare, to tell you the truth, is when I go into the house and I look at the chimney and there's bricks falling down, and I say to the buyer, the top of the chimney's the bricks are loose and there's mortar missing. You need a mason. And that can be a very expensive proposition depending on the chimney and the area and how much. And I can't even tell you what the devastation inside the chimney is. It could be an indicator that the whole pipe inside is collapsed and now you need a liner. So he's like, oh my God, I never saw that. Now, I don't know why he didn't see it. He should have been looking at that before he even put his bid in, because he should have been aware that now, okay, I know how bad it is. When I walked up, he should have said, I'm concerned about the chimney, top of the chimney. Can you look at that? But when he hasn't seen it yet it's obvious to the naked eye, that's a concern. I always think that's a bad job on the buyer's part. And then probably the agent's part should be pointing that out. Now, if I find it inside the chimney, I find it hidden in the chimney, I find it hidden on the roof, you know what? That's what you're paying me for. You're paying me for the expertise. This month I did 42 homes in the month of June. 42 homes tells you me that I've been looking at a lot of attics. I've been looking up. Doesn't make me perfect. As a matter of fact, folks, I probably made my – I missed something in a small condo. It was an outlet above the stove, and it was to the microwave, and the Romex just stuck out of the wall, was wired to an outlet, and the microwave was plugged in the outlet, and it was just taped up, and there was no box, no nothing. Now, the buyer called me and says, I'm surprised you missed that because you're so detailed and you found other things. And I went back and looked at my pictures. Now, I don't have a picture of that cabinet, unfortunately, because I take a lot of pictures. But usually if I open the cabinet and I don't see anything wrong, I don't take a picture of it, because otherwise I'd have 8,000 pictures instead of 300 for the house. And I suspect, but I can't prove it, and I can't be 100%, but I suspect I couldn't see that outlet. I suspect that wiring was behind boxes that were in there, because the kitchen was a galley kitchen. It was packed solid. It was very difficult to maneuver in there. And I suspect I missed it that way visually. And, you know, my contract says I can only inspect what I can see. I'm not allowed to take everything apart, but I still feel obligated that I missed that and that I would like to have caught that. I'd like to think that that's what I'm good at doing, but it's possible, guys. You can only do what you can do in the time allotment, and you can also only move certain people's property around. You can't just take carte blanche and move everything they got. So that's it. There's an idea for you guys that are selling. Don't hide it and make it available, because the more limitations I have, the more limitations they're going to have on the report. So with that, we're going to take a little bit of a break here, and then we're going to come back and wrap up with a couple of things more. I hope you're finding this interesting. I'm finding it interesting talking about it, but I'm sure it's boring to some of you. But if you're looking for a house, these are some of the things that you should be looking at, and hopefully I'll save you from putting a bid on a house that you'll ultimately reject if not. But don't forget, every house is worth it. Every house, there's no bad houses. There's just houses that are better than others, and there's also the value proposition. As I said before, I bought my house. I put a roof, siding, windows, kitchen, three bathrooms, a lot of sheetrock inside, a lot of wallpaper peeling, ripped every stretch of carpet out of the house, every bit of flooring out of the house. But I knew that going into it, and the price that I paid for it reflected that I was going to have to do all that. So those are the considerations you got to look at. The defects are something different, and hopefully I'm trying to save you. Three things I try to save in my inspection. I try to save you from heartache. Those are things that come up as a surprise and you didn't know. I try to save you from your big money items that you don't want to shut the shell out unless you're ready, unless you know about it ahead of time and you're prepared and the price reflects it. And the last thing is safety. And safety most important to everybody, because we'll talk about a little bit about it when we come back about the structure. Safety is important, and it's the biggest thing in my book, tell you the truth, is I'm biggest concern is your safety, and I don't want anybody hurt in a house that I inspected with something that I could have predicted or warned about. That doesn't mean that people do everything that you tell them about. I mean, I've had people who say they're not putting up a railing, and if somebody falls the railing, I'm still going to feel bad, but I'm going to feel somewhat satisfied that I did my job and I told them that it was a risk, and they were willing to accept it. So we'll go from there. So we'll be right back in a couple minutes, and hope you're enjoying it, and we'll talk in a few. Thanks.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
Hello, this is Nicole Smith, host of Happy to Help. Would you like to discover the secret to happiness? I talk to volunteers, executive directors, fundraisers, and authors about how nonprofit engagement enriches their lives. We thrive when we have a sense of purpose in our lives. Philanthropy is the new community. Tune in to Happy to Help every Wednesday at 10 a.m. to discover how to find your purpose and live well by doing good.
Did you know the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce has over 20 active committees that you can participate in? Committees range from focus on business and government to economic development to events like our annual business expo. Contact the Chamber for more information today at 908-782-7115 or email us at info@hunterdon-chamber.org. The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
All right, I'm back. Got a couple of minutes before the end of the show today. Hey, guys, we're off next week, so the radio will be in loop, I think, for the whole weekend. But there will be no live shows next weekend for the honor of 4th of July. I'll be back the week after, and hopefully I'll have a guest lined up by then. But I do have a guest from Weikert coming in at the end of the month talking about real estate again. And it's always interesting hearing from different real estate agents. And you know, it's funny. Real estate agents like anything else. If you got to find one you like, but you got to find one that is in line with you because they're all different. I think they're like priests. I mean, you go to a church and you don't like the priest, you go to another one, find a different priest. I think the same thing with real estate agents. But I'd like a little shout out to Jeannie Murphy, who Jeannie's been good to me, and she's a real inspiration out there. So if you happen to be looking for one, give her a call. Yeah, she'll be happy to help you. She's at Weikert here in Flemington. But let's talk about a little bit about just about the – we were talking about the structure. Let's talk about decks a little bit because decks bug me because decks are an easy thing to build, but they're a hard thing to get right if they don't do it, if they don't do it right. I mean, and one of the things I see a lot of is elevated decks, and I don't see them constructed correctly. I had one the other day that had 2x6 brackets on it, and it was a 2x8 board joist hanger, and they looked like they had drywall screws in it. Anybody that knows anything about construction knows drywall screws have no shear strength, and shear strength means the strength to hold things up from the side like that. Sheetrock screws are built to hold the sheetrock to the wall from the head, not the side space. It's not the weight on the side of it that is the strength. And sheetrock screws are notoriously brittle, and when you hang a bracket up like that, the bracket becomes brittle. And this microphone won't stay up, and it's driving me crazy, guys. But anyway, that's what I look at, and then when I look at the post, and I see posts in the dirt, and you see the rod at the bottom of the post, somebody wasn't thinking, because if you're building that deck today, you know, get that post up off the ground, get it on a concrete pylon, get the water draining away from it. Guess what? That post will last 100 years. Now, you may think, oh, I'm going to put it in the ground because I'm not going to be dead and gone before it happens, but post can rot in 5 years, can rot in 3 years. It can infect it with insects within a year. So get it up off the ground if you can and protect it that way. So I'm battling with this microphone, guys. I don't know if you see it. But anyway, so There you go. And then the railings are another thing. Railings, you got to look at the new code. Railings are supposed to be supported, and they're not supposed to be notched anymore. You can't have a 4x4 notched railing. You're supposed to have a full-fledged 4x4, and the railing has to be a certain height, and also the spaces have to be 4 inches or less for case for children. And they don't want it to be climbable. And the higher you go, the more accurate you have to be. Unfortunately, even a low deck, you should be accurate, but I worry less about a deck that's built on a 6-inch space off the ground than one that's built 14 feet in the air. Another thing is cantilevered houses. Cantilevered houses are like bi-levels that the second floor sticks out 3 or 4 feet from the first level. You cannot connect the deck to the side of that. Well, you can put a rim joist on there, and you can hang things on there. It has to be supported from below. The meaning, you got to think about where the stress is going, and think back to your high school physics. And I'll thank Mr. Crigliano out there, and I know one of my listeners out there, Linda, will appreciate this. Mr. Crigliano will teach us about forces and how to get the forces to the ground. When the force of the deck is pushing down, if it's pushing on a cantilevered portion of the house, it's pushing on air because it's not meant to be hanging there. So the transfer is not to the wall. So the joists have to be either extended to the wall inside the soffit, or you have to build a post and beam underneath the edge of the deck along the house to support it. So something that seems obvious that you think, oh, I can do it, and it seems fine. And when you jump up and down on it, you're saying, oh, this is sturdy. This will never cave in. Well, you're going to have your son's first birthday, and you're going to have 20 people up there. And if that deck fails, you're going to be sorry. It might never happen. I don't want to paint that picture. I don't want to be that alarmist. But I do want to protect you from the worst case that can happen, and that's that. That's why, we look at life safety things as serious as possible. And now those are some of the things. So if you're thinking about building a deck, make sure you do your homework, do your research, get it inspected, get your permit. I'm not a big permit guy in a way, but at the same time, that's one area where you really want to have it, because if you go to sell the house, people are going to ask you, did you have a permit for that? And if you don't, you're either going to be forced to go out and get it, or you're going to have to take the deck down. Or you're going to have to sell it, you're going to find another buyer. Or they're going to get reduced in price. So a lot of things can happen. So in that. Also, you can't cut joists in your floor in the basement anywhere, any nilly way. There's a requirement where you're supposed to drill a hole, not in the top, not in the bottom, in the middle, away from the edges. There are stress points. And some joists, it's not going to matter because there's not much stress on them. On other joists, it's going to matter because maybe the top floor is on there, or maybe the wall that supports the staircase is on there. So understand there's a reason for these rules, and they're all physics in nature. Do your homework. Use your YouTube. Use Google. Search on it, and get the right things. Talk to somebody. Talk to somebody who's built it. And you don't always need a structural engineer. Get a contractor that knows how to build decks. Had a friend, Roger Mahir, and I tell you what, he's a roofer. And I tell you, he's not an engineer, but he'll tell you how to do it right. And he'll tell you the right way, and he'll tell you where you can cut corners and if you have to. But it's not going to hurt you. But, I mean, there are things out there like that. So make sure you take care of people, take care of those things and make sure you do them right. Now, basements are funny. We'll probably wrap up with basements today. Basements are funny because I was in one today, and the crawl space was all boarded up, and you can't get to it. Now, my report's going to say limitation that I can't get into the crawl space. It should set up a red flag because what's going on in that crawl space that they actually locked it up and you can't get into it. But crawl spaces have to be ventilated correctly. Two schools of thought. Either you climatize them by having heat and air circulating them, or you vent them, and then you vent them in the summer and you close them in the winter. The idea is to keep the moisture down because moisture is your enemy. You've heard me say it once. You've heard me say it a dozen times. Moisture will destroy any house, and it's your biggest enemy. It's the one thing that everything needs. Bugs need, rodents need, rot needs, termites need. Everything needs, mold needs moisture. So understand, manage the moisture in your house, and you will manage most of the conditions of it. And you'll also be able to control it. And if you need a help expert, there are experts out there. There are water companies that specialize in the basement to remove the water. There are ways to do it from inside. There are ways to do it from outside. There are expensive ways. There are inexpensive ways. And there are better ways than others. But by closing your eyes or thinking it's not there, water does not go away. There's a reason insurance companies do not cover most water damage that's over 2 or 3 weeks old. They want you to mitigate it. If you had a leak and you didn't see it for 3 months and you should have seen it, and you didn't report it, they probably won't cover the damage. If it happened yesterday, they will cover it because they know that the damage is going to only get exponentially worse as the days go on. It's going to get worse as you ignore that water, because water is relentless. It doesn't stop. It may dry up for a while because, if we have low water. But this year I've been seeing a lot of water damage. So basements are one area that you can't cover up. And for Pete's sake, guys, learn about insulation before you put it up. Put the vapor barrier has to go to the warm side. I did a house the other day. The insulation was upside down, and the insulation was full of mold. Not only did you waste all your money on your insulation because it was useless all these years because it was full of water and it was damp, now you got to get a mold remediation company in there, rip the insulation down, clean the beams, and put the insulation back the right way. It's not obvious. I mean, it looks nice and neat when you put the paper out because I'm guilty of this, tell you the truth. Is I've stapled it up, and, you do that, and it's great, but it's the wrong way. Learn how moisture travels. This old house has many episodes about how the moisture travels from inside to outside, how it travels from your warm space into the cold space, and how your vapor barrier has to be in the right position. It has to be on the inside, not on the outside of the insulation. And once insulation gets wet, guys, it's ruined. You're not going to recover it. You're not going to save it. You're not going to dry it. So they cut it out. And that's why if you ever see these houses down south that had the floods and still having them in Arkansas, I'll tell you the truth is, they cut the sheetrock 2 feet up. They cut the insulation out because if the water went in 6 inches, they cut it up. And they usually go up 2 feet because that's half a sheet of sheetrock, and it's a lot easier to repair if you're just cutting sheets in half and filling the gaps than it is if you're doing 18 inches or such. But also it ensures that they get good, clean insulation and good, clean wall to clean from. So those are some of the things that you guys can look at. We're going to get ready to wrap up. My thought for the week, though, it's just 4th of July. It's a patriotic week. I didn't see much of the debates, and I saw some of them on Good Morning America, but it seems sad that we're more interested in talking about what other people are doing wrong instead of what we can do right. It reminds me of what my mother used to say, if you don't got anything good to say, don't say it. Because it seems like we should be talking about what we can do and what we're going to do. Not what the other guy's doing wrong, and not what the other party is doing wrong or the other guy is doing wrong or what mistakes we've made in the past. I think as a country, we got to think of that way. We got to think of how much better we can make it and how lucky we are. I'm going to a ball game on Sunday, Avid Community Services, Home Housing Services. It's the organization that actually runs my son's group home in Long Valley. For those of you who don't know, my son Matt lives in a group home in Long Valley with three other young men, or it's two other young men, soon to be a fourth. And Avid Community Services runs it out of Denville, and they run a bunch of group homes and a terrific organization. And I thank them for their dedication and their love and support of my son. They're having a ball game at the Patriots game on Sunday, and it's $35, and it's all-you-can-eat barbecue. It's in the picnic area, and we get to see the ball game. So we don't get to see the fireworks because it's an afternoon game, but Matt and I's favorite is to go Friday night and see the ball game and see the fireworks. So we're going to be going that Sunday, so I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to seeing my big buddy Matt. Those of you who know me on Facebook, you always see a good picture of he's always got a big grin on his face, and he's always looking for something. And he's the quietest. And for me, he's never said a word, just so you know. He's nonverbal, and he's never said a word, so he's a perfect companion. I get to talk. He gets to listen. And he doesn't bitch back at me like my wife. But that's just it's a great thing. But he is a good kid, and I'm looking forward to it. So my thanks go out to Avid today. And pick your charities, guys, because there's plenty of them out there, and there are plenty of people out there doing good things for good people. And I thank God for people like that because this is a disability that is truly, truly, truly gut-wrenching because there's such potential there, and there's such a great human being in my son. But he does need the care, and he does need the adult supervision, and he probably will long after I'm gone. We're preparing for that, too. So, hey, have a great 4th of July. Enjoy the weekend next weekend. I'll be back in 2 weeks and look forward to it. So all you guys out there, thanks for listening. I hope you learned something today. And I actually had four or five more topics I thought I'd run out. But look forward to it. And I'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Thanks. Have a good day. Larry McAtee for the Huntington County Chamber and Home Team Inspection Service at 973-547-7748. Thanks, and have a good day.
What do you want to do when you grow up? When we were young, it's a question we were often asked. As we get older, our passions become clearer, our pursuits become careers, and if we're diligent, we begin to plan for the life we want to live. That's why, at Ameriprise Financial, we ask what's most important to you. Starting with our confident retirement approach, your Ameriprise financial advisor will ask questions that help you arrive at a customized plan that allows you to realize your goals today, tomorrow, and throughout retirement. With the right financial advisor, life can be brilliant. Call Michelle Heide and Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 16 Lee Street, Units 1B and 1C in Clinton, New Jersey. The confident retirement approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services Incorporated, a registered investment advisor.